Chapter 4. The Palmdale City Library sat 7 blocks from the high school, an easy hike on foot for students. The modest 2-story structure drew from the heritage of the region with stucco exterior, Spanish tile roof, and Joshua tree landscaping. Alice Van Arsdale ran the library for the past 10 years. In her early 50s, she was trim, with neck-length brown hair, reading glasses hanging from her neck with a gold chain, and a gentle manner. Her husband was the professor of English literature over at Antelope Valley College, and the two loved a good-natured debate over the superiority of British versus American authors. Linda dropped Jenny in the parking lot at 3 p.m. "I'll be at swim practice. I'll pick you up at 5, she said. Jenny closed the car door and went inside. The sudden cool air sent goose pimples up her arms. The room was as quiet as a church and almost devoid of people. She suddenly realized she'd never been in a library before. Bookstores, but not a library. They seemed oddly similar. "Are you Jenny?" Alice said. Jenny turned around to the checkout desk. "Yes, I'm supposed to meet a Miss Van Arsdale." Alice smiled. "That's me. Come on over, let's get acquainted." She waved Jenny over to a side table. "I'm the library director, Alice Van Arsdale. You can call me Miss Van Arsdale. Now, you're Jenny Rockland?"
"That's right."
"Now, you're new to Palmdale?" Alice asked.
"Yeah."
"Where did you live before?"
"Chicago."
"Oh, my, that is quite a change. Well, I'm glad you're here. I understand you're wanting to volunteer for the next month or two before school starts, and I think that's admirable."
"Well, it's actually a punishment my parents cooked up," Jenny confessed.
"Oh, I see. What was the crime, if you don't mind me asking?"
"I snuck out of the house in the middle of the night and went joyriding with some friends," Jenny confessed freely. She didn't care what this strange lady thought of her.
"Well, I like you already," Alice smiled. "You've got spunk."
Jenny smiled back, surprised at Alice's reaction.
"Really?
Oh, yes, indeed. And this library is full of books about women just like you, full of spunk. Have you ever read anything from Louisa May Alcott?"
"No."
"Jane Austen?"
"Who?"
"I'll tell you what. I understand you can give me 2 hours a day, so I'll have you restacking books. There'll be enough each day to take you about 2 hours, but if you hurry and get your job done sooner, I will not punch your time card if you'll spend the rest of your time here reading."
"Reading what?"
Alice rose to her feet and lifted her finger as if to say, "Wait right here." She walked over behind the checkout desk and flipped through some hardcovers, then selected a book and brought it back to the table, placing it in front of Jenny.
"Pride and Prejudice?" said Jenny.
"Exactly. By Jane Austen, a female author."
"Do we have a deal?" she said, extending her hand.
"Well, I would have never picked up a book with a title like this," she frowned.
"I think you'll like it."
Jenny could hardly refuse working off her community service time by reading a book in air-conditioned comfort. She shook hands.
"Deal."
"All right, then. Let's get started." The two made a tour of the library. Alice pointed out the various reading rooms, offices, bathrooms, and employee break rooms. On the second floor, they walked by a wing of stacks in total disarray. The bookshelves were dismantled, and the books stacked on the floor along the wall.
"We're replacing all of these old wooden bookshelves with new metal ones," she explained.
Jenny made a brief note of the young fellow installing the new shelves. He was 19 years old, with long, wavy brown hair, not quite to his shoulders, but well-groomed.
"Does he work here?" Jenny asked.
Mark Jansen." Alice glanced over at Mark. "Yeah, he's on loan from the city work crew. He's helping our maintenance man with some projects here. You'll probably see him around here for the rest of the summer." That night, at bedtime, Linda stuck her head into Jenny's room.
"Just wanted to say goodnight," Linda said.
"Oh, Mom," Jenny replied, can I ask you a question?"
"Sure," Linda said.
It wasn't often these days that Jenny actually wanted a conversation. Linda sat down beside her. What's up?
I know you were a book editor back in Chicago, but I never really understood exactly what you did.
Oh, well, I was in charge of taking manuscripts that the publisher was interested in and polishing them up and getting them ready for printing.
What does that mean, polishing?
Well, some manuscripts needed revisions, maybe changing words, tightening up the narrative, even deleting passages that were unnecessary or repetitious, making the final draft crisp and engaging, that kind of stuff.
Did you ever want to write a book?
That was the most grown-up question Linda could ever remember Jenny asking. It called for sharing vulnerabilities.
Yes, I've thought about it.
Why haven't you?
Linda shrugged. Well, I guess I never thought I had a story to tell.
Then Jenny shifted gears abruptly.
Do you think I have spunk? Jenny asked.
Spunk? Linda squinted a bit. Where did that come from?
I don't know.
Linda had to think about that.
Yeah, I'd say you're full of it. And I mean that in a good way, she added with a wink.
While Jenny settled into her community service, Sam began dismantling all the development log jams holding up the final approvals for Desert Heights, and there were several. First, objections from adjoining property owners. No councilman wants to irritate nearby owners if a proposed project might have a detrimental impact on their property. One major objection came from Luke Sutter, whose alfalfa fields benefited from the stormwater runoff coming from the vacant land along Desert Heights.
I may lose some natural irrigation water that comes from that land if somebody comes along and covers it up with asphalt and concrete, he complained at a recent zoning hearing.
Sam sat down with Luke and offered to create a series of retention ponds to capture any stormwater runoff with canals that would channel all that water into Luke's irrigation ponds. Problem solved. Other homeowners along the street leading to the entrance of Desert Heights worried that this massive development would create a traffic nightmare along that single-lane street and pose a danger to children walking along that unpaved shoulder of the road. Sam agreed to widen the street to 4 lanes at his expense and install streetlights and sidewalks for a mile from the development entrance. The neighbors could hardly object to these civic improvements and the clear benefit to their home values. Problem solved. The city itself pointed out a snag in the zoning laws that forbade playgrounds from being built in a residential zone.
You're just going to have to forget about that playground, the zoning director informed Sam.
No, I can't do that. That playground is going to be like New York Central Park for all those homeowners and their kids.
Not my problem, the director said.
I've driven around town, Sam replied, and I don't see anywhere a memorial park honoring our fallen soldiers. I think that's a shame, don't you?
Keller Development would be willing to donate the funds needed to erect a monument to our fallen soldiers from all previous conflicts, and we'll convert the playground into a memorial park, which is a permitted use in a residential zone. He handed the zoning director a petition signed by hundreds of members of the American Legion and veterans of foreign wars supporting Sam's plan for a memorial park. And there's nothing in the zoning laws preventing memorial parks from having playground equipment, Sam explained. Checkmate. The zoning director did not expect Sam to come so well armed for this standoff. He surrendered.
So can I count on your support for our memorial park at the next zoning meeting? Sam asked.
The director shook Sam's hand. Well played. The last hurdle required some creativity with the utility department. Water and sewer lines did not extend to the Desert Heights property line, which currently fell outside the city limits. The city balked at the expense, demanding that the county of Los Angeles pay for it. The county denied the request, expecting Palmdale to pony up the money.
The dispute descended into an ego match between city and county bureaucrats, with Keller Development stuck in the middle, and the stalemate was now into its second year.
"Why don't you just annex the development into the city?" Sam suggested. "Just take it away from the county. The property taxes alone you stand to gain will pay for it, and that'll give you jurisdiction and the right to tell the county to just kiss off."
"Well, we just don't have the budget," the director of water and power confessed.
"Maybe next year."
Sam could not let the project languish for another 12 months.
"Oh, hell, if you can just cover the labor, I'll pay for the materials," Sam offered.
"Well, I think we could swing that," the director said.
Done and done.
Skip stopped by Sam's office late one afternoon.
"I just read your memo. That's a hell of a lot of goodies you gave away to clear up all our roadblocks. How did you think you were going to pay for all of it?"
"I noticed early on your home sites are all about a third of an acre.
That's a lot of backyard. Nobody wants to cut that much grass. I know I wouldn't. So I took the liberty of redrawing lot lines and shrinking all those backyards just a touch.
You used to have 200 home sites. Now you've got 210. We're going to pay for all those goodies with those 10 extra homes."
Skip grinned broadly.
"You are one crafty son of a bitch," he chuckled.